talk about something today that I usually love to preach Easter stuff. And next Sunday is Palm Sunday. You know, they laid the palms before Jesus as he rode into Jerusalem. They call it the triumphal entry. It's just so wonderful all that he's accomplished and all that he does. And I won't get to preach next week because Peter Kumar's here, and you'll have way more fun with him. He's just lots of fun. And come expecting a word. And I encourage you to come on out in the evening sessions too. Bring people with you. They will be really happy that they came. They will. He's just amazing. And next Saturday morning, there's a session, and it's about business, but it's also finances, anything finances. Everybody can use this. And so if you can do without a couple hours on Saturday, then you'll be glad you did. And then Easter is 2 weeks from today. And I'm looking forward to that. I may get to preach that day, though, so we'll see. It's just so good. I read more purposefully during, you know, the season that we've been going through, because I love to just wash that stuff over me. What he accomplished, what he did for us at the cross. It's absolutely amazing and exciting. So. If you want to turn with me to Luke 19, Luke 19 and verse 28. I'm waiting for my optimal optical healing. So Luke 19 and verse 28. And when he had said these things, he went on ahead, going up to Jerusalem. When he drew near to Bethphage and Bethany at the mount that is called Olivet, he sent two of his disciples, saying, "Go into the village in front of you, where on entering you will find a colt tied, on which no one has ever sat or yet sat. Untie it and bring it here. If anyone asks you, 'Why are you untying it?' you shall say this: 'The Lord has need of it.'" How do you think that would work if you were caught stealing a car today? So those who were sent away went away and found it just as he had told them. And as they were untying the colt, its owner said to them, "Why are you untying the colt?" And they said, "The Lord has need of it." And it worked. And they brought it to Jesus. Throwing their cloaks on the colt, they set Jesus on it. And as he rode along, they spread their cloaks on the road. As he was drawing near, already on the way down the Mount of Olives, the whole multitude of his disciples began to rejoice and praise God with a loud voice for all the mighty works that they had seen, saying, "Blessed is the King who comes in the name of the Lord. Peace in heaven and glory in the highest." And some of the Pharisees in the crowd said to him, "Teacher, rebuke your disciples." He answered, "I tell you, if these were silent, the very stones would cry out." Ah, that's so wonderful. We've actually been to the Mount of Olives there and looked down on Bethany and at the foot, kind of behind. If you're looking out at the Temple Mount, you kind of look back the other way, almost 180 degrees, and down the hill, and you can see Bethany down there. And so Jesus went to Bethany and then into the city that he loves so much. It's an amazing story. It's kind of a steep hill to walk down, and the east gate now is all bricked up, and a Muslim ruler bricked it up, assuming that the creator of the universe wouldn't be able to get through a brick wall. And then they also put a bunch of graves in front of it, you know, as if that's going to stop the triumphal entry when Jesus enters from the east gate, because he's coming back again. It's so exciting. So this is about what we would call Palm Sunday, right? Now, we'll read some of John in a minute, but this was an unusual sort of a day. It was a usual day in that we see it from our side of the cross, right? And so Sunday to us is a weekend. You know, we don't do our work on Sunday. Most places were closed when I grew up on Sunday. But Sunday was a regular work day for them. It was the first day of the week. Everybody's going to work. Everything's normal. Everything's back as usual. The Shabbat or Sabbath was the day before, and everybody was not working. Everybody's celebrating the goodness of God, and they're back to work. So Monday blues would have been Sunday blues to them. Everything would have been just normal, except it was the time of the Passover as well. And that throws things for a bit of a loop when we look at it looking back. And I want to show you a couple of things. I'm going to look to John 11, verse 55. And then I'm going to go to John 12. John 11. And verse 55. Okay, 55. Now the Passover of the Jews was at hand. Everybody knows what the Passover is about. It's about Exodus when God was redeeming the people of Israel from the tyrant Pharaoh and his armies. It was Pharaoh had the most ferocious fighting force on the face of the earth at the time, they say. God brought them to freedom. But part of bringing them to freedom was that he sent the death angel into their camps, and if you followed the certain steps that were there, including killing a lamb and roasting the lamb and eating all of the lamb and taking some of the blood from the lamb that you killed and put it on the lintels of the doorway, if you did that, the death angel would bypass your house, but didn't bypass the Egyptians' houses. And so the death angel would pass over your house. And so they celebrate the Passover. Right? And so now the Passover of the Jews was at hand, and many went up from the country. So they come in from all over the countryside where Jesus had been ministering during his 3.5 year ministry time to Jerusalem before the Passover to purify themselves. They were looking for Jesus and saying to one another as they stood at in the temple, "What do you think? That he will not come to the feast at all?" Now the chief priests and the Pharisees had given orders that if anyone knew where he was, he should let him know so that they might arrest him. So Jesus was walking into what they thought was a trap. Now John 12:1 said, 6 days before the Passover, Jesus therefore came to Bethany, where Lazarus was, and Mary and Martha, you know their house, whom Jesus had raised from the dead. 6 days before the Passover. So that there, when we look at that, it's sort of the week before, right? So the Sunday before the Saturday, which was would have been the Sabbath, right? And all four of the Gospels say before the Passover. Then we say that John 12:12. The next day, so it was 6 days, now 5 days before the Passover, a large crowd that had come to the feast heard that Jesus was coming to Jerusalem. So they took branches of palm trees, and so we have Palm Sunday at that point. Now I want to look at John 19:31. This is in all four Gospels, but it says it specially here, 19:31. Since it was the day of preparation, and so that the bodies would not remain on the cross, this is after Jesus is dead, a day of preparation, the bodies would not remain on the cross on the Sabbath, for the Sabbath was a high day. Right? You get that? The Jews asked Pilate, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so that's what's known as Sabbath Haggadah. They read the Haggadah during it. That particular Sabbath is related to Passover. Now, Passover moves every year. Like, it's always on the same day in the Jewish calendar, and it's the first full moon after the vernal equinox. And that's the way they gauge it. But that particular day, that particular Sabbath moves all the time to a different day of the week. And so the Sabbath there wasn't on Saturday. Sometimes it was. But often, more often than it was on Saturday, it would have been another day of the week. So you get two Sabbaths in the same week. Right? Everybody get that? So this was a high day Sabbath they're talking about. This is the Passover Sabbath, not the run-of-the-mill, every week we get a Sabbath Sabbath. Right? Like, they're all special, but this was a high day. So they're making reference to the Passover Sabbath, different than normal Saturday Sabbath, right? Do you ever wonder why Jesus is such a bad accountant? He said he'd be in the grave 3 days. But if they put him in Friday night, he's in Saturday and he's up on Sunday. Now, that's part of 3 days, the way I look at it, but I've been an accountant a long time. But it isn't 3 days. It never satisfies me. So, what's the problem here? Would you put my thing up? I want to show you something, okay? You can see it probably better on those ones, but I'll point here. So this is a week, not quite a week. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, okay? And it's based on there was evening and there was morning, and that was the first day, right? So a normal Jewish day is from sunset to sunset, right? So the days start at sunset and work through to the next sunset. Boom, 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 boom. Okay? So this is, in the sacred calendar from the Jews, this is the 14 of Nisan. Nisan is this. They sort of have two New Years. one at the beginning of the harvest and one, or the planting and one at the end. But that's not a full year, so they're kind of 7 months apart. So, but Nisan is a very special month. It's the beginning of a year, as they call it. But this 14th of Nisan is when Passover starts, always, the 14th of Nisan. Now, that could be on our calendar. It could be anything from March 23rd, I think, to April 24th, something like that. Anyway, in that range. So the high day Sabbath is the day after the beginning of Passover. So if Jesus was crucified right before the Sabbath, right? And they say in there that it's a high day, then it wasn't the day before Saturday, right? It was in the high day. Now, if you take a look at our calendar and how we set things apart, we say that, some people say that Jesus died on AD 30, right? Anno Domini, like after the death of, or after the birth of, sorry, Jesus, 30 years. So that would have meant that he was born in 2 or 3 BC. You don't count, or 4 BC, yeah. You don't count the zero year. But anyway, I'm getting sidetracked here. Numbers. So 30 seems to be the year that everybody, as close as people will agree. Theologians are not want to agree. They're like economists, you know. You put 50 economists in a room and you get 150 different interpretations of what you're looking at. So, so 30 AD, the 14 of Nisan would have happened on a Wednesday. Okay? Now this isn't set in stone. I'm just giving you some ideas here. This is for free. You don't have to take it with you and base all your doctrine on it, but it makes a whole lot of sense to me. 30 AD, Nisan 14, is on Wednesday. If Jesus was crucified on Wednesday and put into the grave Wednesday night, or, you know, at sundown, then the Sabbath or Shabbat, the high day, would have been Thursday, and then Friday. Then they had another Sabbath, Saturday, and he rose again on the Sunday morning. 3 full days and nights in the grave. Isn't that interesting? Now most theologians have worked with just the Saturday and Sunday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday of the Passover week for that year, so that Jesus went into the tomb on Friday, was in over the Sabbath, and then rose on Sunday. But if you look at it as the high day, which is what they just said in John, he was actually in the grave for 2 Sabbaths, the high Sabbath and the weekly Sabbath. Interesting, isn't it? Okay, you can kill that if you want. So, now that has nothing to do with what I wanted to preach about, but it makes a whole bunch of sense to me. 3 days and 3 nights in the grave, and it was prophesied that he would do that. And that's sort of important to me. So, Jesus enters Jerusalem. Whatever day it was a palm day. Because they put the palm branches and coats and stuff down on the road for him. Now, what on earth is he thinking? We read that the chief priests and the Pharisees were looking for him because he was a problem to them. He was healing people everywhere he went. And, you know, a lot of those people were coming to Jerusalem for Passover. They could have been the people that recognized him and started to put the palm branches down. Oh, that's Jesus, you know. How did they know it was him? He probably healed them or people in their town, and he would have been easy to recognize for them. So what was he doing? Why would he make a gesture so dramatic that the crowds went wild and praised God? The Pharisees, seeing this, asked Jesus to stop them. So rather than stopping him with the crowd around, they said, hey, you want to stop those people from doing that? And so he said, nah, because you're going to be more upset when the rocks start singing Hosanna. You know? Yeah. What was Jesus really thinking? He enters in plain sight on a busy work day as people are coming from all over the country into Jerusalem. And you know, Jesus is amazing because the very next day he went into the temple and he kicked over the table and chased the money changers away. Do you think that would draw attention? Yeah, I think so. So the money changers were just, you know, in the temple they wanted to have the temple money given to them, so it was easy for them to take care of. So they would change wherever you were from, they would change the money from there into shekels and temple money. And they would, just like today, the banks make their money on the difference, right? What you bring and what you sell for. So buying and selling rate, the difference is where they make their money. And they were making too much. And so it was usurious. They were taking advantage of pilgrims that couldn't stand up for themselves. So he makes this dramatic public act of cleansing the temple. Jesus, his act was sort of like go big or go home. And he went big. He let everybody know he was there. He had nothing to hide. This wasn't a covert operation where he wanted to slip in with his crack team of fishermen. He went in an overt fashion, accepting the praises of the people that only God should have accepted. Duh. and then going into the temple and making a ruckus. He went big. So his behavior sort of doesn't make sense. Usually Jesus didn't want to be the center of attention, right? How many times did we read that he said, you know, after he healed somebody, he said, don't tell anybody, just go on your way or go present yourself to the priests or, you know, just don't make it a public thing. And some of them did anyway, but his modus operandi or way of doing things was to be quiet about it. He didn't want to cause a fuss. But today, he's causing a fuss. This weekend, he's making a point. So as Jesus approached, or Passover approached, Jesus came to Jerusalem intentionally to make, and if we look at it, it makes sense, two demonstrations, first against Roman imperial control over the city of peace, and you'll understand that in a minute when I read you something else, and second against Roman imperial control over the temple. The temple was controlled by Rome, and the high priest only did what he was told by the governor, right? He wasn't free to be a Jew. He had to do what he was told. Sort of like China now. And coming back in Russia, you know, your favorite old way of dealing with the church is coming back. Anyway. Jesus went in on a donkey, a little donkey. And Josephus tells us that Pilate arrived at the city earlier in the week on a black stallion. He rode into Jerusalem on a black stallion. The Roman governor, sub-governor in this case, but he arrives on a black stallion, much fanfare. He's come into Jerusalem. They knew there was going to be a problem, and so he's there. But he's on this great horse. So Jesus, it's almost like he's lampooning them. He's making fun of them because he arrives, the King of Kings is arriving on a donkey. But they arrive on this wonderful horse, this steed. All four Gospels tell the story of the Palm Sunday, we call it, entrance to the city. Jesus chose to ride a donkey, and some say she had a colt beside her, her little baby colt, that couldn't carry a person at that time, but it fulfills the words of the prophet Zechariah. Zechariah said, "Shout aloud, O daughter Jerusalem. Lo, your king comes to you, triumphant and victorious is he, humble and riding on a donkey, on a colt, the foal of a donkey." Interesting. Prophesied over 400 years before that. Jesus knew that Pilate was coming in on a black horse, a steed. So why did it say he would come in from Zechariah? Zechariah 9, verse 9 and 10 I'm reading from. It says in verse 10, "He came to cut off the chariot from Ephraim and the war horse from Jerusalem. And the battle bow shall be cut off, and he shall command peace to the nations." He arrives to come against the most warlike nation that they were facing, the one that had them in tyranny at the time, Rome. Rome had them under its thumb. And Zechariah prophesied that Jesus is, or the king is coming in on a donkey, and this is what he's going to bring. He's going to cut off the chariot and the war horse and the battle bow, and he will command peace to the nations. The very opposite of what Rome did. They had Pax Romana, which was, you know, a Roman peace. You do what we say or we'll show you our hobnail boots. But that's not the peace that Christ brings. His peace is pure peace. And that's what he was introducing to the world, because they had arrived at Jerusalem for the Passover. coming from everywhere. So you contrast Pilate on his stallion and Jesus on a nursing donkey mare with her colt beside her. You see the intended message. Peace on earth, yes, but not peace by Rome's violent victory, but rather peace by God's nonviolent justice. Jesus also forced the issue when he created a disturbance in the temple by driving out the money changers. He acted out a parable. The temple was the house of God for all nations, but the temple and its high priests were allowed to function only under the control of Rome. And it was all about money. Rome took its share of the temple tax, right? It's the old protection racket. The mafia really understood this thing, Rome. So we'll leave you alone. We'll not mess you up. We'll let you operate as long as you pay us. So Jesus is going in and saying, enough of this. You guys cannot operate your illegal operation here. I'm stopping it. And that would have made everybody mad. So Jesus was amazing. So only under the control of Rome were the temple and its high priests allowed to function. And so with the whip, Jesus declared that it was unacceptable to God. Jesus symbolically destroys the temple's fiscal basis by overturning the tables where the money was changed into the standard denomination coinage. So, Jesus knows that his day is coming. Maybe he had to make everybody mad so that everybody would want to arrest him, right? Maybe that, like, he knew what he had to do. But he knew he had to die that week. He knew this was the time. And so he entered Jerusalem with a bang, with an incredible triumph. Yeah, it was an incredible show. Spontaneous people adoring him, and then he ticks off the money guys. You know, the money guys are always the guys that are in control, right? Follow the money. That's where you find out where things go wrong. Follow the money. And so he ticks off the money guys. He ticks off the religious guys. He ticks off the governor because he wouldn't have been getting his cut that week on a week that is probably the most lucrative of the year. All of the people from all over the countryside are coming in. And so Jesus made a point of doing all of that. He rides into Jerusalem and he walks into the temple. So what is he doing with you today? Because you have the temple now. You walk with the temple. What's happening today as he rides in? Humble. Humble. This is Jesus who isn't yelling at you. He's coming in gently. He'll come in gently and he'll talk to you. And he'll say, let's fix that. I've got something better for you than that. I got something that's way better for your future. So why don't you just give that thing up? That behavior that has been bothering you for a while. And why don't you just give that up and we'll turn things around a little bit. Is he working that way in your heart right now?
Hallelujah.
He does that kind of thing. He hasn't stopped going into the temple to overturn the thing that is the problem. Is it money? Money is a big deal in this society today. Do you love to shop a little too much? Are you Are you coveting things that you shouldn't be coveting? It's Jesus coming in to turn over the tables in his new temple that you happen to walk with every day?
Wow.
Is he doing something absolutely wonderful in you to make a point that he wants to give you better? He wants you to live a better life. He wants you to live more understanding of who you are and how you can live and grow and love in him. He has something better for us. He had something better for the Jews, and they rejected him, many of them. It says in Acts that many priests actually came to believe in Jesus. The Jewish priests came to believe in Jesus. But many of them rejected him, and they still do reject him. But he is the Messiah, the one that they were looking for. They recognized it on the Palm Sunday, if it was Sunday. He actually was in the ground for 3 days. I really believe that that happened. I don't believe it's the weekly Sabbath that he was crucified before. I think it was the high day, as it says in John there. We just read it together. On the high day, Sabbath, he was crucified. And there would have been another Sabbath coming up real quick. And it works out for when the girls or when the ladies, you know, bought the spices and took it, and we're looking for him on Sunday morning and all that stuff. If you work it through, it works really well. But it really doesn't matter, because what happened is that Jesus died, was crucified, he died, he was buried, and he rose again. That's the important part. Whether it's important for you that he was in the ground for 3 days and three nights, doesn't matter. He was in the ground, dead, confirmed, gone. But then he rose again. And it is finished, he said. He rose again.